No wonder it's scary to get back into the dating scene, because you've already conditioned this belief that you just don't matter as much. So when I'm talking to you about establishing boundaries or saying no, or having difficult conversations, it's not just to make your life harder. It is literally because your self-worth depends on it.
The big question is this. In a world of fake Instagram models and fad diets, how do real people achieve their fitness goals? We are an army of hardworking women changing their lives through fitness and health. Wherever you are at on your journey, we have the answers to how to make working out and eating well a part of your life. Join us in changing the dialogue for women everywhere. Welcome to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the pod. I am excited to have you guys hear this week's episode. I talked to Amy Green Smith this week, and I think that it's an interview that you are not only going to adore, but also one that you are going to learn a ton from. So Amy is an amazing life coach, and she is a personal empowerment expert. She basically is out there kicking ass in the way of empowering women and showing them their true self-worth. She is the host of the Bold Face Truth podcast, and she also is the creator of Speak Up for Yourself Without Being a Dick. And I loved our conversation. We talked about people pleasing and why we do it. We talked about the fear of assertiveness and how to use it without being a jerk. We talked about so many topics that I think that our audience, you guys, are going to really, really benefit from. How to shut up that inner critic, why you might feel like an imposter, and how to really set some boundaries that are going to help you communicate with people in your live your best life. If these topics sound like groundbreaking and awesome to you, Amy is your girl, and you're going to love this pod. So enjoy. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast. I'm Rachel, and I have brought you guys someone you are going to absolutely adore. Amy Green Smith is with us today, and she is a certified and credentialed life coach, a hypnotherapist, a master speaker. And guess what her expertise is? Personal empowerment. That's what I've brought you guys today. Personal empowerment. And she is so fantastic. Amy, thank you for being on the podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to chat and hang out.
So excited. So first of all, I've been through all of your stuff, and I just can't even start without saying thank you for what you are bringing to the community of women who feel they might struggle in areas of confidence, in areas of assertiveness, in drawing boundaries. The work that you're doing is just so important. And I just have to slow clap for you for a second, because you are making such a massive difference to so many women.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. I think the piece of patriarchy and oppression that women have felt is largely manifested through women being pitted against one another, right? Like if we can fight within ourselves, if we can slut shame, and if we can say, oh, you should be a mom, or no, you should have only a career, or if we can be fighting against one another, then we're not actually uniting our power. And that's a huge, huge element of the work that I do, is creating sisterhood in order to thrive.
I think that that is going to resonate so much with our listeners, because that is a message that they really feel strongly about, and so do we. So can you tell me a little bit about your background and kind of how it led you to this place of
being a guide for personal empowerment. And that's quite a journey.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think like many folks who find themselves in the quote expert space, we've had quite a trajectory of our own difficult times. And a lot of those lessons are hard won. And my situation is very much the same. So for a bit of context, I grew up in a very conservative, born again Christian home. And my father had a master's in divinity and a doctorate in ministry. So he was not fucking around. Yeah, it was pretty hardcore. And I was, by all accounts, kind of the quote, good kid. I started working when I was 14, put myself through college, got married young, moved out, was very independent, juxtaposed against my two younger siblings who had a difficult time with the law, did jail time, not very academically inclined. And everything kind of came to a head for me in 07 when my father passed away. And at the time, I was working as a makeup artist, and I felt very, very convicted to do his makeup for his viewing. So this is like the dead dad makeup portion of the show, y'all.
Wow.
And I also spoke to a crowd of hundreds of people that same day. And I felt like it would be kind of an asshole move to be like, Dad, get your own makeup artist, since I had this skill set, right? And so I'm feeling like I'm winning at daughter that day. And we get back home to my mom's house, and she finds it the most opportune time to tell me that it feels as though my father and her had failed as parents, because the three of us, grouping me in with my siblings, were no longer subscribed to the faith traditions we were raised with, right? The quote, not walking with the Lord. And I'm like, I just did makeup on my dad's corpse. So how about there's a little more to it than that? And the only thing I could really muster in that moment was to say, you probably shouldn't say that to a child. And she just said, well, that's just how I feel. And that really was a pivotal moment for me, because I realized that if push comes to shove and I have to choose between making someone else happy or making me happy, I'm going to choose me. And up until that point, I hadn't. Every time my partner and I had gone to see my family, I put up this veneer, this facade where I, you know, would prep him and say, no cussing, no drinking, no Jon Stewart, no South Park, no liberal agenda, no, you know. And so we would kind of put up this artifice every time we were around them. And then this sort of proverbial dam erupted when I finally couldn't keep that facade up anymore. And I'll tell you, Rachel, the trajectory after that, I became incredibly combative. I wanted to fight about everything. I was super adversarial. And it wasn't until many, many times with my mom where I had to walk back, not how I felt about something, but I had to walk back my delivery, that how I came across wasn't doing me any favors. And that really became the kind of impetus behind the work that I do now, which is twofold. It is one, this internal element, believing that you actually matter, that your voice is relevant, that you are worthy, period, full stop. And then the external component of, then how do I communicate with the outside world? What does it look like to ask an adult child to move out of the house? What do boundaries sound like? What's a tough conversation look like if you're asking for a divorce or severing a business partnership? And how do you do that with grace and with kindness, but also assertiveness? So that was that's sort of the origin story of how this work kind of came about in my corner of the internet.
Like some of our most beloved and favorite guests, the road is often one in which you find these things out the hard way and are inspired really from those experiences to pave a path
so that other women, you know, don't have, or maybe have an opportunity to avoid some of the heartache that it caused you, and just sometimes offer an alternative message, because there isn't one out there. It's not readily available. And so I just, that's so powerful. And thank you for, you know, your candidness on sharing your family and your background, because that's such an important part of your story. I want to talk to you a second about something that you mentioned that you struggled with a lot. What's your birth order, by the way? Are you the oldest?
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Everything you described about you and then the siblings that followed sounded very much like you were the oldest. I know that a lot of, no matter what your birth order, women in specific struggle with people pleasing, right? And you know, have had this as a part of your journey with trying to please your parents, and maybe later on struggling with that with other relationships. Can you discuss how you define people pleasing and why it applies, you think, to so many more women than it does men?
Yeah. Well, I think we have a very myopic view of what people pleasing is in the personal development space. One, we oftentimes think that it is ascribed only to people who are incredibly introverted or maybe shy, maybe have somewhat of a repressed or protective posture, people who never are gregarious or expressive with their emotions. And that could not be farther from the truth. I define people pleasing as any time that you twist and contort your behavior in order to gain favor with others at a severe cost to self. So where you are offloading what you want or what your desires are to somebody else. So essentially, if you are highly invested in the opinions of other people, it's likely that there's some people-pleasing tendencies. The other thing that we can't overlook here is the fact that people-pleasing actually is in service of us in some ways. And I know that might sound like, whoa, what? But it is an iteration of our defense mechanism. So if we are talking about like fight, flight, freeze, fawn is a little bit of a newer one, that if we are in a threatening situation, we might fawn, or the modern iteration of that is people please in order to stay safe. So for many of us women who are listening now, we know what that's like to be, let's say, in a social situation where there's an aggressive man. And if you get on your feminist soapbox and say like, fuck off, you know, or whatever, you are most likely in more physical danger. So to people please in that situation might actually mean your physical survival. And that's exponentially worse for any other marginalized community. If you find yourself in a disabled body, a queer body, a black or brown body, a fat body, and I use the word fat through a liberatory lens, then you are likely needing to caretake for your physical safety in some way. So I think that it's incredibly important that we don't reduce this down to some sort of arbitrary personal development concept and say it's always wrong at all times. So I think the first thing we always have to analyze is, am I in danger, or is this just new when we are having sort of a fear response about speaking up? And I would argue that a majority of us are not imminent danger when we choose to people please other people. Most of the time, that's not the case. A majority of it is fear of how we might be seen, how it might affect our business, how our family might perceive us. It's not necessarily that we might die in that moment. But the reason why it's exponentially worse for women is because we have been given that role without our consent. So we've been told from a very early age that we need to caretake for the emotions of everyone else. And if you think about for elder millennials and older, the toys we grew up with, I mean, even some younger millennials, the toys women grow up with are caretaking type of toys, how to caretake for babies or how to cook and clean or how to be the beautician or whatever. We're not getting the science play kits and the NASA starter kit. We're getting stuff that's saying you are responsible for caretaking, and that includes the emotions. How many times have we ever heard like, oh, you can't say that to him. You could never say that to her. You would destroy her. You would say, and the notion behind that is you are responsible for how other people feel. And men don't really get that. Men don't get that messaging nearly as much. And I will say also, touching on sort of marginalized communities, when you have a social structure that is set up to say white is better than anything else, male is better than female, straight is better than queer, thin is better than fat, now you have a whole body of people who are walking around feeling less than already. So it takes so much more courage, and we also know they incur exponentially more stress in order to speak up about that and in order to take a firm stand. So I think it's important that when we're talking about these concepts, that we look at all the nuance therein.
That's so, my whole entire next question has to do with the fear of assertiveness. And I wanted so badly to hit on that actual physical fear that comes along with these. It's so, so important because you're right. Talking about these concepts without that backdrop, when you have that constantly following you around, it is really pertinent to even the way that you're reacting to when you're not in physical danger, because it's almost like a routine. It's almost like a habit. It's almost like, this is what I do to keep me safe. And so even when I'm not in danger, that's my fallback. And, you know, the trait of assertiveness often comes with fear for a lot of women. And sometimes, you know, assertiveness is kind of the answer to anti people pleasing, right? I'm not going to people please. I'm going to be assertive instead. It's like this, I'm going to make this jump. But all of a sudden I feel afraid. And I was watching these really interesting videos that were a complete paradox of like this whole thing. One video, a woman was being approached in a social situation in a bar or something. And she was super aggressive and was like, I don't know you. Get the fuck away from me. I didn't ask to talk to you. Get out of here. I don't have to be nice to you. And this is being videoed. And of course, the comments are riddled with men going, this is so rude. She could have let him down in such a nicer way. She's not being polite. Why does she feel the need to act like this? That she was completely in the wrong. And the next video was a woman who had been approached at the beach, and she started filming herself because the text on the screen was like, this man's been here for 30 minutes and I can't get him to leave. And her posture was very smiling, polite. Yeah, her words were, I'm not interested. Thank you anyways. No, I'm here to be alone. And he wouldn't leave. And the comments were riddled with men going, well, she's smiling. What does she expect? She's being kind of flirty. She's not being assertive. How does he know to go away? And that to me was it right there, right? It's like, is there no right way to be assertive? Is there no way in which we are going to be accepted for either not being a rude bitch or not leading him on with our smiles and kindness? And I'm wondering if there is a right way to communicate for women, if we can ever be right.
Mm. Well, I think this is such a great illustration of how we're kind of damned if we do, damned if we don't, right? This is not dissimilar to the woman who chooses not to have children and build a fucking empire, or the woman who is totally fulfilled by staying at home and having a million babies. There will always be a grouping of people who have something to say about that. And now we have a social media structure in which people can just be keyboard commandos and say whatever the fuck they want to say. And I would also argue that a majority of those people would not have the gall or audacity to say it to people in real life. So there are studies that have been done that have proven that a majority of the communication that we have come through our body language and our tone of voice, our paraverbal and our nonverbal skills. And that makes up about 93% of how our message is conveyed. It doesn't mean that people only hear 7% of our words, but it does mean that our body language and our tone of voice send a bigger impact. So when people are just, you know, being keyboard commandos behind the screen, you're not getting any of the other elements of communication. You're not seeing, there's no repercussion there. And so I don't think that we can always take that as enlightened response, because I personally feel like it's pretty cowardly. But to answer your question, no, I don't think there is. I don't think that there's ever going to be a free pass for women to communicate in a way and just be respected. I think that's why we have to fucking take it. We have to take up the goddamn space. So here's what, with both of those anecdotes that you shared, both of those situations, those women do not owe those men anything. And your gut response and inclination, the first one, is a fight response. So you are dealing with a sense of threat. It makes a lot of sense that you would fight in order to take care of yourself. The second one is more of a fawn response, people pleasing in order to stay safe. Now, we know that 100% of assault is caused by somebody who is assaulting. It doesn't matter how nice the woman was, how aggressive, what. It does not matter what she was drinking. And I also think it's pretty fucking simple from my perspective that if a woman is saying, please leave me alone, even if she's being kind, go leave her the fuck alone. I don't understand why that is so complicated. We're not that complicated in the, you know, oh, I'm batting my eyes and saying, leave me alone, you know, no. So I think this is also partly why patriarchy really does a disservice to men as well, where they have to turn off any type of soft qualities, and we relegate them to one emotion. We say the only thing you can have is anger and everything else is off limits, right? So there's a lot of ways that I think it's stacked against us. But what I always lean on is your physical safety is the most important thing. So for example, one time I was being interviewed by a black woman. And we were talking about her having a baby. And she was talking about some people pleasing behavior that she had with some of the nursing staff and the doctors in the hospital. And she was like, do you think I was like people pleasing? And I said, no, I think you were caretaking for yourself in the best way you could, because of all of the developed nations, we have the highest mortality rate for women. And it is, again, exponentially worse for women of color, specifically Black women. So if your life is in danger or your baby's life is in danger, yes, do whatever you need to do to keep you safe. Now, that's not to say that there aren't times to fight and there aren't tables to turn over and things like that. But I don't want anyone out there to feel like taking care of their safety somehow makes them less of an assertive or powerful woman. Sometimes it makes you just the smartest.
Ugh, I'm so glad you said that. I am so glad you said that. And I'm also really glad that you said, you know, how men are affected by the patriarchy as well, and how they're told to ignore all of the basic means of human communication and just be a pursuer. The pursuers get what they want. And, you know, it's just like, it's so hard because that quote, it just keeps coming back to me. Men are afraid women will laugh at them. Women are afraid men will kill them. It's just it's a real fear. And I'm really glad that you said that you can be a powerful woman, you can be an assertive woman, and you do not have to feel in physical danger. You can put your own protection first and still be. Because I know exactly what that woman is saying about, you know, her birthing experience. It's like, you go back and you go like, did I give up my values? Did I in this moment? But like, if it feels in your gut, like your safety is at risk. I'm so, so glad you said that. How about establishing boundaries? Because we know that so much of this cycle of fear of assertiveness, of people pleasing, lack of confidence comes with having these sort of fuzzy boundaries and not really knowing how to go about establishing strong ones. Can you talk a little bit about that and your work?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk briefly about why we are so afraid and what that what is scientifically happening. Because so often we think like, oh, I could speak up or I could establish boundaries if I was as confident as Rachel or if I was as outspoken as Amy, right? And that it is a learned skill. And there's also a very strong reason why you are having such an intense kickback mentally. And it has everything to do with how the brain is wired. It has everything to do with the functions of the subconscious versus the conscious faculty of the mind. So essentially what happens is when we are younger, we will, and this could be in your formative years, this could also be in a first marriage or in your collegiate experience, where you learned that by people pleasing or taking care of everyone else, you could stay safe. Let's say you grew up in a family with not even necessarily abusive, but very aggressive or outspoken or domineering parents, you might have found that by staying under the radar, by walking on those eggshells, you could do what you wanted. You could stay safe. You would not be called out. So what happens then, you develop a positive association with people pleasing. So now the mind registers that behavior as safe. So now when you listen to a podcast and someone tells you like, oh yeah, you start speaking up and you try to do that, everything in the conscious mind goes, this is in direct opposition to what we know in the sub. And the subconscious is, depending what study or who you talk to, is roughly 90% of our mind's power. So that 10% of you going like, no, I can speak up for myself, guess which one is going to win? So there are ways that we can start changing that. But one of the pieces is recognizing that the reason why you're getting so much kickback, the reason why there's so much fear, is because your body is going, I don't know if it's safe. We know how to people please. We know how to acquiesce. We don't know if it's safe to speak up. Now, there's ways to work around that. And one of them is by using your voice habitually over and over again. This is one of the reasons why I love hypnosis so much, because it helps remove that little bit of kickback. So essentially, there's this little guard dog in between the conscious and the subconscious. So anything that you're trying to feed into the conscious mind, that little guard dog, which is our inner critic, will check for congruency with the subconscious. So for example, if I'm trying to tell myself I can establish boundaries, that little guard dog is going to go, no, you can't. No, you can't. We have all this evidence down here. Fuck off with that behavior. Affirmations. How cute. You're trying to do all these fun personal. No, bitch, sit down. Right. So what we need to do is figure out ways to work around that inner critic where we can go, okay, I need you to just, this little pit bull, I need you to go to sleep for a little bit. And that's what happens when we slow down the brainwave state in hypnosis. So that little guard dog kind of goes to sleep so we can embed more powerful statements and beliefs into the subconscious mind. Another way to do that is through repetition. But because we oftentimes are choosing some form of either a mantra or a physical behavior that is so A to Z, that inner critic goes, fuck off, no way. And so we throw in the towel really, really quickly. So one of the things that we can do is start by, there's a whole segment on boundaries that we can talk about as well, but I think we need to figure out, where do I complain about someone or something habitually over and over again, and I haven't taken any action on rectifying that grievance? So for example, let's say you have a big issue with Kelsey and you're talking about it, but you're talking about it to your other sister, right? You're talking to your sister about it. And, or let's say I have a real tough time going on with my partner and it's just my therapist who gets an earful and I never say anything to him. So sometimes we are speaking up, but we're just doing it to the wrong people. And by analyzing that, is there something I'm complaining about, some person I'm complaining about, and they would have no idea that I am this upset or that it's this big of a deal, then that's on us. And I'm not talking about just venting or clearing out something rough from your day. I'm talking about habitually. Because what we do then is we lock ourselves into victimhood without even realizing it. So first item of business with boundaries is to figure out, where am I actually silencing myself? Because that usually, once you create that heightened awareness, it starts to become more and more painful to stay quiet. And we have to create that awareness before we're able to change anything at all. And by doing just baby steps like this, it's more palatable for that inner critic. It's more palatable for that dog to be like, fine, I won't bark as much. And then it's more likely that you can have repetition with speaking up. Yeah. So that, I would say that could be the very, very beginning, is looking at who do I complain about the most?
Oh, it's me. We're interrupting this podcast to tell you about the coolest leggings that have ever been on the planet ever. And if you are going to try to crush this new year, you need them. Why are you laughing?
You sounded like that kid. Have you ever had a dream where... Have you ever tried the best leggings and then they are sweatproof?
No, it's so true. Sweatproof, squatproof. They are so freaking comfortable and they have pockets. If you're listening to this podcast and you're not currently wearing our leggings, I gotta tell you, you are missing the boat, sis.
You're missing the boat. And the thing is, most people don't know as they start to get new leggings that not all leggings are created equal. Ooh. And you don't know that your leggings are see-through until you've been wearing them for a month at the gym and someone gets up the courage to tell you that they've been seeing through. Our leggings never see through, completely squat proof, sweat proof, and they stay up while you're working out. So grab a pair for this new year at constantlyvariedgear.com.
It's always just noticing. I just, the step to any kind of change for me, always step one is just noticing the behavior and just like sitting with it for a second. Oh shit. I've complained about her 3 times this week to myself in the shower. I probably need to hash this out, right? Like just noticing where you're silencing yourself. I love, love that, because it doesn't come with so much judgment. It just comes with like a, oh, okay. Take a little note of that. Check. Okay, I need to have this on my radar.
Yes. One of my other favorite hacks to kind of move around the inner critic, because again, we have to remember that guard dog is trying to keep you safe. It's the same thing that y'all talk about when you're talking about set point weight theory. The body is going to fight to get back to what it knows, to what it feels is comfortable and safe. It's not doing it to be a dick to you. It's the same exact thing with your inner critic. It is fighting to get back to homeostasis. We know what this is like. And so it registers things as known or unknown. It doesn't register them as powerful powerful or not powerful, a good decision or bad. It just registers as known or unknown. So if it is more unknown for you to speak up for yourself, then it's going to get really chatty. It's going to be like, hey, bitch, I don't know. I don't know if this is safe for us. But one of my favorite workarounds is a tool that I've coined called progressive language. So instead of doing an A to Z jump by saying, I am capable of speaking up for myself, or I know my voice matters. Instead of something like that, where repeating it is going to be so difficult because it feels like such a bold-faced lie, annexing something to the beginning that is progressive. So it might sound something like, I'm exploring what it looks like to use my voice. I'm entertaining the idea that I can establish powerful boundaries. I'm re-engineering my relationship with being vocal. Something like that, where the inner critic kind of goes like, ah, all right, I'll allow it. I'll allow it. And then you can actually use that repetition. You can do that over and it's like if someone's training for a marathon or a Spartan race or something, and they just start and you're like, go ahead and run that course. It's like, oh, the body's like, fuck off. Right? Like, no, there's a reason why you need to train, and you have to do, like, sometimes it's an A to B, sometimes it's an A to G or M, but we have to figure out what is palatable for my internal conversation that I can actually say it with repetition in order for it to become a new truth or a new reality for myself.
That's so great. And it's also so much less overwhelming than some of the affirmations. As you said, they just feel like bold-faced lies. And you, even though that may be where you want to end, it feels so far away from that, that it's just like, why am I, this is ridiculous. And you're right, that inner critic does come in. And I know you've called the inner critic also your inner shit talker. And I definitely can identify here. I don't know if in your research you found that some people have a little bit louder inner critics than others, or some people struggle a little bit more. But I think those methods of just not silencing, but turning the volume down a little bit could be really, really helpful, because sometimes I find, at least, that is a huge boundary whenever I'm trying to make any changes to my behavior or my habits, is just like, you can't do that, bitch. No, absolutely not. All the evidence says you've never done that. Working out in the mornings, you've never stuck to that, ever. So like, don't even try. And I think so much of self-growth kind of dies in that loud inner critic.
Yeah, it absolutely can. So something that I think is important to understand about this too, and I think you all have talked about this a few times as well, some people will have almost like a literal voice in their head, and others will have what I term self-sentiment, where it's not necessarily literal words they hear. It's just an essence or sort of a sentiment of, that's not possible for you. You're not going to do that. You're not good enough. And then some of us have sort of a hybrid of both. So there are times when I will hear verbatim words in my mind. And then there are other times when it feels just like an essence. So for example, let's say you're scrolling through social media and you see somebody who's in, like, I don't know, a fucking bodybuilding competition. And that's always been a goal of yours. And you went to high school with this person and you're like, you don't hear any words, but your heart kind of falls and you get sort of this pit in the stomach feeling. That's an entry point. So we have entry points through our thoughts, through our body's responses, through our emotions, and also through our behaviors. So a lot of times we can look at different behaviors that we choose. For example, if we choose to continue to go to the gym with somebody who has a really disordered relationship with food, and we go because we've always gone with them, and we've, you know, maybe we went to college together or something like that, but we've kind of outgrown it. But our mind is like, well, it's familiar, it's comfortable, right? And so we stay in those environments, not realizing that, like, oh, that behavior sheds a lot of light on what your beliefs about yourself are. So a lot of times we buy into these ideas of, you know, historical friendships, or I could never hurt him, or I could never hurt her, at the cost of our own happiness. And what we're doing, and this is also happens when we choose to be silent, when we choose not to speak up, what we do with those behaviors or with that choice to be quiet is we send a habitual message to our subconscious mind that we just don't matter as much as that other person. And we don't think that. We think it's noble. We think it's so noble to put other people first, again, because we've been programmed to believe that. And I also blame a lot of religion for that as well. And so we think, I mean, think about all the idioms we have around don't rock the boat, don't open up a can of worms, sweep it under the rug. All of those are idioms to say shut the fuck up and make everybody else more important. So if we are constantly sending this message to our self-worth that you just don't matter as much as everyone else, no wonder it's hard to go start that new gym or to become a fitness influencer or to start that vegan raw food line that you've been dying to. No wonder it's scary to get back into the dating scene because you've already conditioned this belief that you just don't fucking matter as much. So when I'm talking to you about establishing boundaries or saying no or having difficult conversations, it's not just to make your life harder. It is literally because your self-worth depends on it.
Oh, man, I just... When you put it in these terms of like how many reps we've got on the other things, how many reps we've got to tell us you're not important, you don't really matter, other people need to come first. When you think about the number of sets and reps we've had there, and then how many we would need to put in place to start moving back to the other direction, it feels overwhelming sometimes, but you know what? It really isn't linear. And it really is a matter of your self-worth. Like, you're depending on you here. So this work is so necessary for like everything you want out of life. And when you put it in those terms, it's like, you know what? It doesn't feel like that much work when you're talking about what's at stake here. It's so important. Tell every little girl. A couple of years ago, we did an episode on imposter syndrome, and I can't even tell you what an overwhelming response we got from so many women. They didn't know the word to identify this feeling. They just knew they had this feeling and had felt it constantly. Why do you think, despite the tremendous accomplishments and accolades that people can just name off about themselves, why do you think many women regularly feel like a fraud?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with what we were talking earlier about how those who are in a marginalized identity are already told that you're on a bottom rung. And there was a social justice class that I took in the summer of 2020, and it blew open my mind about the correlation between social justice issues and personal development. And one of the things that really hit home to me was that systems of oppression are able to stay in power if the oppressed party continues to buy into the belief that they are less than. So, like we were talking about at the very, very beginning, if women continue to buy into the belief that we are less than men, we're going to tolerate being paid 80 whatever cents on the dollar, and worse if you're a person of color. So, and again, it's the way we set up everything, the way we look at those who are in fat bodies versus midsize or small bodies. We say we can accommodate your body as long as it looks this way. So we already have a culture that takes a grading system for all of these different ways that we identify. And has already said, and this is where equity comes in, we've already said you're not enough. So one of the fiercest acts of resistance and rebellion and fuck you to the patriarchy is to say, I'm going to believe that I am enough in a world that tells me I already am not. like, what a brazen fuck you and piece of courage to say, everything is stacked against me and I'm not buying into your bullshit. I'm not. I'm going to believe that I deserve rest, that I deserve play, that I deserve pleasure, taking up motherfucking space in those arenas. We tell women, you can't enjoy your sexuality. You can't enjoy your food. You can't enjoy your body. You can't enjoy your wealth. No, fuck off. So I'm going to enjoy my money. I'm going to enjoy my body. I'm going to enjoy my fucking food as a massive fuck you. And as somewhat symbolic and emblematic to other women and to future generations that, like, no, women are going to take up space with our bodies, with our emotions, with our wealth, with whatever the fuck. But I don't think that that means that any of it is easy. But that idea for me to take it out of just me and my little internal struggles with my body or, you know, my business or whatever, when I can make it meta and so much bigger about a global sisterhood, about women's empowerment, about future generations and legacy, about social reform, that is easier sometimes for me to advocate than my tiny little Amy world. And so I would encourage you all to think about that. It's a tool. It's a useful perspective, but it doesn't mean that it's easy. And with the conversation around imposter complex, which, by the way, I prefer to use the word complex just because I again, don't, first of all, it's not a real syndrome. And I don't think women need another thing to be told they have wrong with them.
Love.
So I liken it to like a Napoleon complex. It's like, oh, it is it's a imposter complex. And in the research that I've done around that, there are a ton of people, Maya Angelou, Michelle Obama, Meryl Streep, Tina Fey, people who we would consider by all standards, quote, successful, have all made statements about feeling like a fraud, feeling like an imposter. And when you look at what's different, it does not mean that they don't have fear. They still have fear. We're all going to have fear. It's part of our primitive makeup. But the difference is contending with that fear from a place of courage over and over and over again. Courage cannot exist without fear. So if we think about that, our opportunities for courage and bravery and profound change are only going to come in the face of fear. So it's an opportunity. So once you've analyzed it and said, okay, I'm not actually in clear and present danger. It is actually something I can do. I'm afraid because it's new. Now we know we can contend with that fear over and over from a place of courage. That's what gets you to a level of success. In fact, I think there's only one documented case of a woman who existed without a fear response. And it was unbelievably detrimental because she would just walk into the middle of traffic. Like, she just didn't register danger at all. And unless she's listening, which I doubt she is, that means the rest of us have to contend with fear. And so it becomes, how can I like the term fear optimized as opposed to fearless. I don't think fearlessness really exists in the way that we typically use it. But to optimize is to make it as useful or as effective as possible. So if I'm going to have this fear, how can I make it as useful as possible? To contend with it from a place of courage. And to recognize that it's just trying to keep you safe. It's sending off alarm bells and it's up to us to go, hey, thank you so much for coming to my rescue. We're actually not in danger. We're okay. I talk to my fear response all the time. And it's a way for me to distract that mental noise instead of getting in my way. I'm like, oh, thank you. Oh my gosh, you're so cute. You think we're being attacked by a mountain lion. We're not. We're just going into an audition, or we're just going, whatever. But how cute that you always come to my rescue. We're okay. Let's breathe. Yeah. So that's my perspective on imposter complex.
It's so good in the sense of maybe not avoiding fear so much and thinking of it when we're looking at the scale of emotions and where we put fear is a complete negative that we want to avoid all the time. It's a bad feeling. And let's do everything we can to not have fear. Without fear, there is no courage. And without opportunities to show your courage, how can that be a practiced and learned behavior? We talk a lot to women, you know, about using fitness in a way of practicing daily courage, doing a hard thing every day, and practicing that ability to say, didn't die, another day, did a hard thing, lifted the weights, went on the run, didn't die. And without the opportunity to practice that, how is it going to, you know what I mean? If we're constantly saying, if it's fear, I don't want it, then there is no opportunity to practice courage. And I'm so glad that you meshed those together as something. Let's not be afraid of fear.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's there to protect us. You know, I think of it, that little inner shit talker. It's almost like, so fear is the emotion. And then the inner critic is kind of the voice is telling you what's going on. And that's going to happen for all of us. But I think of it kind of like a best friend who has really bad communication skills. So instead of them saying, I'm really concerned about you, they're like, bitch, look out. And it's up to us to kind of go, oh, no, we're okay, honey. Thank you. Thank you. We're good. We're good.
Oh, so good. I want to end with a question that is, it's dangerous. It's a little dangerous, but I want to see, you know, if you had access to every woman and every little girl, and you could implement some of these teachings, and we all of a sudden had a world where every woman had access to feeling like she mattered, feeling like she deserved things, feeling like she could take up space. What does that world look like?
In one word, it's matriarchal. It is all of the brilliance that women possess. I mean, we're seeing even more data coming out about how capable and unbelievably skilled we are in situations that we've been written off of, and how we actually are better suited for situations that and careers that we've been told for years are a man's world. And it's just simply not true. But I think one of the major differences is that I heard a quote ages ago that said, men should be so grateful that we just want equality and not revenge.
Oh, sis.
Right?
Oh, sis.
And I think that really spells out what would be different. I mean, if you've seen the Barbie movie, it's that sort of a thing. It's that we want harmony. We want equality for everybody. Our perspective, and obviously I'm saying this as a generalization, is not of a women versus men. It's everybody being able to take up space and be valued for who they are. And I think that's the big difference. And I also think it's one of the reasons why men are so terrified, is because they think that we're talking about a flip of the script, and we're not. We're not talking about the exact opposite. We're talking about a completely different paradigm where we don't have to fight for our value based off of some really bullshit criterion. So I see one, if that were to be the case, which now some women are creating these communes and momunes, where they're women who are moms are creating these spaces where they're just like, no, we're good without dudes. Studies are coming out saying that the happiest people in the world are single women without children. And it's like, of course, because they don't have the labor. Marriage makes men's life usually much easier. And for women, it makes it considerably more difficult. So I think all of those things take into account what that would look like if we had so much empowerment. I think we would also have much more strong and soft, emotionally intelligent men, because that's what we want. That's what we're working towards. We're saying you get to have your big feelings too. And here's how to process them. Here's, you know, that's been such a disservice to them as well. But I see it as one of equity and equality and harmony. And sadly, it feels incredibly utopian. But it's why I think we have a, at least I'll speak for myself, I feel a strong conviction to handle things both at a social level and at an internal level. I'm the only one who can decide my self-worth. I mean, in fact, the definition of self-worth is one's own assessment of value, right? I'm the only one. And I also think systemically and socially, we have to target inequalities that are giving people different starting points to the race and throwing a bunch of obstacles in the middle of their way. So to me, it's both of those things to help us get a little bit closer. And I'm also really optimistic about the younger generations too. Like they seem to be not dealing with some of the bullshit that we've dealt with historically. So
that feels good. I mean, every single woman that hears these messages and does small things every day to live by these values, some little girl's watching her. And, you know, there's been so many studies on daughters' body image being highly dependent on their mother's body image. And so if we know that trickle down effect is happening, we can use that in any way we want, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be used in a we hate our bodies. It could actually be used in an empowering way. And I think that that's really exciting. And I think that the work that you're doing is that it is that starting point, and it's just starts in yourself and then in your group of women and then in your sisterhood and then in your daughters and then maybe it's a lot of work. This conversation has been just so important. And I want our listeners to know where they can hear more from you because you have so many resources. So many of them are free. So let them know where they can find more Amy Greensmith.
Yeah. So my corner of the internet is over at amygreensmith.com. And all of those names are spelled the basic bitch way. nothing fun or exciting. So just Amy Greensmith. And there are a ton of free sources over there. I've got a workbook for you, a hypnosis track to deal with anxiety and fear. And I also just recently ended an 11-year run on a podcast that I had that I've got like a 500-episode back catalog with tons of resources that you can access. And then like any self-respecting Gen Xer, I hang out the most on Instagram. And you can find me under the handle, Hey Amy Greensmith. And that's my handle pretty much across all of social. But yeah, come get some free shit, hang out. And I'd be incredibly honored to connect.
That would be so great. Everything will be in the show notes, all the links. I've done her hypnosis. It's phenomenal. The ebook, the workbook is just, it's so, so good. And I just want to thank you again for all of the work that you are doing for every woman who maybe has had these. So I'm just going to probably say every woman who has had these feelings of maybe I'm just not enough. And you know what? You are. And you are doing it. So thank you so much for being with us, Amy.
Oh, thank you for letting me hang out and scream into the mic for an hour. Yes, I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast. If you'd like to join our movement, get in our free app, CVG Nation, available in your app store. We have an amazing community of women, coaches to help you with your movements, challenges, and we give away leggings daily in there. Rachel and I are in there every day, so it's a perfect place to get in touch with us. This podcast is made possible by Constantly Varied Gear, so be sure to check out constantlyvariedgear.com. Have an amazing week. Crush your goals.